We were, today's Thursday, so Monday evening, we were completing chapter 11 of Canto 10, and what we are reading from to complete Chapter 11 of Canto 10 was Jiva Goswami's summary in his very special style, the Gopal Champu, basically just going through the chronology of the verses and covering the topics of the chapter with some very, very beautiful embellishments. That's where we left off Monday evening. And we have just a little bit left to complete this chapter 11. Tomorrow we'll begin with chapter 12. So just a little background. We spent some time discussing, because the section that we ended on Monday was Bakasura, and there was some discussion about the teaching that Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives about the killing of demons and which anartha or obstacle in the path of bhakti is represented by which demon and all of that. So we're going to cover that with some more detail. I want to mention one thing before going into that. That is, chapter 8, there's this detailed description, some number of verses, where Gargamuni conducts the Namakarana, the name-giving ceremony for Krishna, and he discloses some things about Krishna's identity. And that comes up again in chapter 26, if my memory is right, after the Govardhan Leela, the wonderful Krishna chapter where the elders of Vrindavan, the cowherd men, are getting together and talking amongst themselves about who is this boy anyway. And they approach Nanda, who then repeats one by one the same verses, almost the same verses that Gargamuni spoke. So we come to understand that everybody in Vrindavan knew, because they love Krishna. And so they knew who Krishna was, you know, beyond he's the son of Nanda Maharaj. So when Nanda Maharaj repeated that, they became reconfirmed. And then again in chapter 31, which is the Rasalila section, the gopis speak the following verse. Well, the gopis speak about Krishna killing Arishtasura and Vyomasura. And that speaking by them happens before Rishtasura and Vyomasura come. And so I'm going to read the commentary from chapter 31, text 3. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur explains that the gopis mention Arishta and Vyoma because although Krishna had not yet killed those demons, the fact that he would kill them in the future was well known, having been predicted by the sages Garga and Bhaguri at the time of the Lord's birth. Now, Garga Muni did not say specifically the name of Arishta and Vyoma. He did indicate that he would protect the residents of Vrindavan with his powers, the powers of Narayan, invested in him. Bhagari Muni was Garga Muni's son. And here's a little information about him. During Garga Muni resided in Mathura. The name-giving ceremony was performed in Mathura. And then Nanda came back to Braja. He had been in Mathura for paying his annual taxes to the king. And on his way back, he invited, and Garga Muni did the name-giving ceremony. His son lived in Braja. Now, there's not a lot of information about him, but here and there, there's some information that says he was considered the chief pundit in Braja. Something like Purnamasi was Yogamaya, but in their brahminical function, because there are brahmanas in the village of Braja, he was the chief pundit, Sabha Pandita, he was called. He was a well-respected priest. He did some yajnas, it's mentioned elsewhere. But he specifically was a narrator of Vedic teachings. He regularly recited Vedic literature in the house of Nanda Maharaj in Vrindavan. He was a celebrated personality. So it turns out that Bhagari Muni, along with his father, predicted Krishna's future. Doesn't say specifically he predicted Arishta and Vyoma, but that's what the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment says. So, there's all these family connections. We mentioned the last couple of days that this topic, someone raised a topic of why Krishna didn't go to Gurukul, or why Krishna didn't receive Gayatri Mantra. And there's a whole bunch of research on that topic. But one of the reasons, there's several reasons, but one of the reasons was Krishna had an affinity for, even before he went to Sandipani Muni school for Sandipani Muni. His best friend was Sandipani Muni's son, or one of his Braja friends, let's say that, Mauda Mangal, was Sandipani Muni's son. And Sandipani Muni's mother was Purnamasi. And both are intimate personalities in Krishna's life in Braja. So when it was time for school, he wanted to go to Sandipani Muni school. There's 8 other reasons, but that was one of them. So there's family connection. The point is, there's family connections here and there. These are royal family members. Nanda Maharaj is part of the Yadu dynasty. And the Brahmanas also have their connections here and there. So the residents of Vrindavan knew that Krishna would be doing some of the things that he was doing. Nonetheless, the exhibition of his power was astonishing. Again and again, this wonderful Krishna chapter speaks about it again and again. Krishna did this and Krishna did that. When he was doing, it was just like, wow, how wonderful. The Supreme Lord protected Krishna, because he's so pious and the demons are impious. So those kinds of considerations. I want to read a text is taken directly from the Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education on Krishna's killing of demons in Braja. There's 2 places from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writing, and there the course, this is a direct quote from their course material, Chaitanya Shikshamrita, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Quote, Sri Krishna's activities are of 2 distinct types, namely nitya, eternal, and naimittika, occasional. In Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna's Nitya Lila, or eternal pastimes, that's in the spiritual world, Krishna Loka, are conducted throughout 8 periods of the day, and they are constantly in motion. But in Bhoma Vrindavan, this Ashta Kaliya Lila is mixed with the Naimitika Lila, the occasional pastimes. Some occasional pastimes include Krishna's leaving Vrindavan to live in Mathura and Dwarka, his returning to Braja, his killing of various demons, and so forth. These pastimes are very useful for an aspiring devotee, that's us, who is bound within this material world, that's us. The Naimitika Lila, or occasional pastimes of leaving Braja, actually exist in Goloka, Vrindavan, but only a conspicuously absent manner. Like, time as we know it is conspicuously absent in the spiritual world, that same language. So there's the bhava of these things, but there's no things. It's like in the spiritual world, we were speaking several times about time. There's the sense of time, but there's no time. Okay, because we had this discussion twice. Rather, in Goloka Vrindavan, these occasional pastimes are truly manifest only in the material world. Practicing devotees, or sadhakas, that's us, understand these occasional pastimes to be like negatively tinted reflections of the eternal pastimes. Like Krishna's birth. That's another occasional pastime. That's conspicuously absent in Goloka. But here's negatively tinted reflections of the eternal pastimes. And such sincere devotees, that's what we're trying to be, hope that by the influence of understanding the purpose of Krishna's performance of different occasional pastimes, their own various anarthas, or unwanted material contaminations, will be destroyed. So I'll read that again, because this is the operative function. In many places, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes like this, that Krishna's killing of the demons in Vrindavan has special importance for the conditioned souls in this world. That's us. And it's Krishna's helping us to overcome our obstacles on the path to Him. So there's the eternal associates, Nitya Siddha devotees. There's the sadhana Siddha devotees that are being chained up by the Nitya Siddha devotees. And then there's us, the sadhakas that are hearing and practicing. So it's teaching us, I'll read more, but it's teaching us, Krishna wants to help us to overcome our obstacles on the path of bhakti, and by remembrance of these pastimes and further, the representation of these demons, that Krishna will help us overcome those obstacles. Or another text is Krishna, Sri Krishna Samhita, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's other text, where he writes, by remembering those pastimes, the devotee aspires to destroy his own sinful conduct. Now I'm going back to the short paragraph from the VIAG course on Krishna's killing demons. In the above-mentioned book, That's the Chaitanya Shikshamrita. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has explained how the demons Lord Krishna killed in Vrindavan represent the main obstacles facing the aspiring devotee. If, by the Lord's grace, these demons can be killed in the various ways they may manifest themselves in our lives, then our progress in devotional service is guaranteed. And at the final section, not quoted in the VIHE manual, but Chaitanya Shikshamrita says, in the 8th chapter of Sri Krishna Samhita, from the 13th verse to the end of the chapter, 18 anarthas, which are obstacles to Braja Bhajan, have been mentioned. Adding to this, the pride of wealth represented by the Yamala Arjun trees and the pride of performing karma represented by the brahmanas, it becomes 20 obstacles. These 20 are unfavorable for Braja Bhajan. The serious chanter should first address the Lord and pray to him for the power to give up these unfavorable items. By doing this, the heart becomes purified. If the devotee prays humbly to Krishna to remove all the obstacles in the heart which are represented by the demons he killed, he will certainly do so. So going back to the earlier part of this chapter 35, who can remember what was the first demon that was killed after Krishna shifted to Braja? And then they began herding with Nanda, with the cows, and then they were entrusted with the calves and playing like little boys in the forest. Then who was the first demon in Braja that they encountered? Vatsasura. So, here's the VIHE language, and then it's a little more expanded in Sri Krishna Samhita. A childish type of mentality, vatsasura, which gives rise to a type of greediness, which results in a wicked type of mischievousness. And Sri Krishna Samhita is slightly different, similar. The living entities are sober by nature, but when they are disturbed due to possessing a body made of blood and flesh, it is called bala dosha, or juvenile offenses. So the childish mentality, giving rise to greediness, resulting in wicked, mischievous behavior. This is an obstacle in the form of vatsasura. And then in the same chapter 35, which we just finished on Monday evening, the review, the next demon was? Starts with a B. Bakasura. Cunning, duplicity, deceptiveness, and false types of behavior. So there's a long section from Krishna Samhita. The most clever Bakasura, who is the personification of cheating religion, is an obstacle for Vaishnavas. This is called Namaparad, offenses against the holy name. Think of Bakasura as you're hearing this. Those who do not understand their qualification, but accept the instruction of a bogus guru and engage in the process of worship meant for exalted devotees, are cheated, ass-like people. And those who have understood their ineligibility, yet with the goal to accumulate money and prestige, still follow the process of worship meant for exalted devotees, they're called cheaters. Until this cheating in the name of religion is destroyed, one's attachment will not awaken. Some people deceive the entire world by making a show of sectarian formalities and pseudo-renunciation. Those who see and respect such proud people's show of external formalities cannot attain love for Krishna and are like thorns in the side of the world. It is to be understood here that one should not disrespect a swan-like person just because he has accepted external formalities that are generally considered detestable. It is the eternal duty of Vaishnavas to develop the symptoms of love by associating with and serving devotees while remaining indifferent to external formalities. That's like a very extended description of this obstacle that Bakasura represents. Now we're going to hear shortly, in the rest of this evening, the Gopal Champu narration where, hearing that Bakasura was killed, Kamsa gets all disturbed. He asks his ministers and he calls for Vyomasura. Vyomasura doesn't come until much later, but at least in this Gopal Champu section he comes, the sky demon, Vyomasura. The explanation, Chaitanya Shikshamrita, associating with thieves and other rascals and with people who put themselves forward as avatars. It's pretty extreme. And Krishna Samhita says, he writes, an obstacle in developing love for Krishna is stealing others' property and speaking lies. So, thieves and imitators of avatars. These create disturbances in Braja in the form of Vyomasura. Now, I'm going to mention this now, though we're still in chapter 11, and tomorrow we're going to start 12, and 12, Agasura appears. Agasura is brother of Putana. One of the brothers. Buck is the other brother. So he represents cruelty and violence. And Sri Krishna Samhita says, Agasura, the personification of intolerance and cruelty, is an obstacle. Due to a lack of compassion for the living entities, there is a possibility that one's attachment for Krishna will gradually diminish because compassion cannot remain separated from attachment. So if you become detached from Krishna, you lose compassion. You become cruel. The basics of compassion for the living entities and devotion to Krishna is the same. Devotion to Krishna, compassion. Without devotion to Krishna, there isn't compassion. It's part and parcel of the same function or entity. I'm just adding that one more. There's 20 total, but Rishtasura, because in the morning class we're on Rishtasura. So here's Chaitanya Shikshamrita. Rishtasura presents pride arising from indulging in false religions invented by cheaters, which causes neglect of bhakti. So here's Sri Krishna Samhita's statement. Many weak-hearted people give up the path of regulative principles and enter the path of attachment. When they are unable to realize the soul's spiritual attachment, they behave like Vrishabhasura or Aristasura by cultivating perverted material attachment. They will be killed by the prowess of Krishna. The example of this obstacle is regularly found among the selfish Dharma devotees, the show bottle devotees. So, now we're back to finishing the chapter. Chapter 11, Gopal Champu. Vatsasura has just been killed, and Kamsa goes, oh no. So, when Kamsa heard through spies that Krishna had killed Vatsasura, he closed his eyes repeatedly. When he fainted, his ministers revived him with great difficulty. Then he began to consult with his ministers. I've sent many skillful, proud people to injure Krishna, but none of them have been able to produce auspiciousness. Though I request them to fool him, my plans are thwarted, and they are killed. What should I do? The ministers said, O Lord, we can take the help of Bakasura, who is very powerful. Those who know him understand that he is the wickedest of all. Kamsa said, yes, he is my best friend. Please send him there. Cruel Bakasura, protected by Kamsa, the tormentor of devotees, knowing that Krishna would come to the place called Bakasthala at the mountain of Nandishwara near a lake, fixed himself there like a moving peak of a mountain. Krishna would think that he was a mountain with a gaping mouth resembling a cave. The cowherd boys, along with Krishna, grazed the calves, made them drink water, and, keeping them on the bank, drunk water and bathed each other. Getting out of the water, they dressed themselves. They spread out to collect flowers to decorate themselves. While picking flowers, they saw Bakasura. The boys thought, is this a mountain in the distance? How has it come here? I see it has a peak. Apparently that was his beak, not peak. It looks as if Indra has struck it in anger with his thunderbolt. But I think it is not a mountain for some type of, but some type of animal, which must have done something wrong and is hanging its head. I think it is a crane with a sharp beak and a frightening appearance. Krishna said, it looks like a bird, but does not behave like a bird. It is some new type of crane which is sitting here. Is it some type of crane which is sitting here like a mountain? Desiring to come closer to it, Krishna began to speak with deceptive words. As a baby snake, poisonous even to touch, approached a frog out of curiosity, lotus-eyed Krishna, surrounded by the boys, holding raised sticks, approached the beak of the crane as if he did not know about the demon, although he actually knew. As a frog tries to swallow a young snake, Bakasura tried to swallow Krishna, but he could not close his mouth. Oh, by this action, which was like dense darkness covering light, he caused great disturbance to Balaram and Sridham and the other cowherd boys. Just as Balaram, though knowing Krishna's strength, experienced pain when Krishna went to deliver Rukmini, he experienced pain in seeing Bakasura's action, since prema includes within it all other emotions. Now this reference to Krishna going to deliver Rukmini. We discussed this, remember? Gopal Champa was reviewing things, but when this came to the actual chapter 35 and, chapter 11, and they saw Krishna enter the mouth of Bakrasura, they fainted. There's reference to Balaram also becoming overwhelmed by prema when he heard that Krishna was going to rescue Rukmini, and he heard that Jarasandha and all of his armies and Shishupal and their armies and everybody in their armies were ready to protect anyone that would try to interfere with the wedding, especially Krishna. So he wanted to protect Krishna, who needed no protection. But he gathered the whole Yadu army and was ready to go there and do battle with everybody. So this is the example that's given. The nature of prema of Balaram is even he knows Krishna's unlimited power. He's seen it many times, including with Jarasandha. Still he wants to protect him out of love, the nature of love. Since Krishna was like a blazing fire in his throat, Bakasura spit him out quickly. And since Krishna would burn his insides, the demon understood that it would be impossible to swallow him. Like a fool, Bakasura tried to squeeze him with the tip of his beak. But just as Bhima killed Jarasandha, or just as a child uproots a bamboo tree, by his unlimited strength, Krishna destroyed Bakasura's beak using his hands and then killed him. When Bakasura had swallowed Krishna, the boys and Balaram fainted. When he spit out Krishna, they became conscious. Natural prema does not give regard to others. In other words, what does that mean? They want to protect Krishna, but so they weren't concealing their emotion or their state or their condition of consciousness in a situation like this. Their prema was overwhelming them, and that determined their behavior. Prema doesn't take into consideration how other people might think while you're behaving. Prema rules. The devatas and the boys became jubilant. Now the devatas, because they had requested Lord Vishnu to appear in this world and destroy the demons, and he's doing it, so they're jubilant. When the killer of Vatsasura killed Bakasura, the devatas began dancing and playing musical instruments, picking jasmine flowers from the Nandana garden. In great joy, they showered these flowers continuously. Observing Krishna's intention and looking on in surprise, they laughed at Bakasura, thinking Krishna's thoughts, "Oh, fool, when you tried to swallow me with your beak, I helped you. If all your limbs were torn apart, what fault do I have?" When Krishna emerged from Baka, the boys immediately regained their life. How can one describe their tears, trembling, choked voices, and change of complexion? Symptoms of ecstasy. With great excitement, they immediately went to the lake and bathed. Leaving the place and taking the calves, they departed for their houses. Returning to their houses, they described the actions of Bakasura and how Krishna killed him. On hearing these two descriptions, the people first became frightened with limbs burning, then moistened as if devastation would take place. This is the chronology of how the devastation takes place. There's a long drought, and then there's a big fire, and then there's an inundation of rain. 1, 2, 3. So their bodies were like devastated just hearing about the danger that Krishna had just experienced. Then their hairs stood on end. This reaction is not unsuitable since they began to relish the news, sweet as nectar. First, disturbed, then joyful, they gathered together and went to Nanda's house, weeping and seeing and touching Krishna's lotus face. They talked among themselves about all the demons killed, including Bakasura. Quote, "What pious acts this child and his father performed in their previous lives! What offenses have the demons committed, for otherwise why would Krishna kill them?" Because Nanda and others, on appearing in this world, experienced bliss, they are not described in terms of material existence. Shukadeva has also said this. This is one of the important verses of this chapter, which translates, "In this way, all the cowherd men, headed by Nanda Maharaj, enjoyed topics about the pastimes of Krishna and Balaram with great transcendental pleasure, and they could not even perceive material tribulations." Next, when Ugrasena's sinful son Kamsa heard that Baka had been slain, he became disturbed and began to think, "Ah! They were all expert at deception and killing, but were all killed. Therefore, I think only Vyomasura is suitable for this job." Now, we're in chapter 35, and this reference to Vyomasura comes later, chapter 37, which comes just before Krishna goes to Mathura. Not Narada's visit. Narada says, "Watch your backside, Kamsa. Krishna is over there." So he sends two more demons. Vyoma is the final one just before Krishna goes to Mathura. So the chronology is not totally in sync with the chapters of Bhagavatam. Kamsa goes on. "He is the son of Sarva Maya Maya." So who's that? Sarva Maya Maya. I looked it up. He is, that's another name for Maya Danava. And Maya Danava is the architect of the demons. And there's another name by which he's known, and it's Maya Asura. Maya Asura combined. Maya Asura. So Maya Danava, Sarva Maya Maya. So he is the son, Vyomasura, the son of Maya Danava. Famous for his strength and highly esteemed. Thus, Kamsa, born from the hard womb of Padmavati, brought Vyomasura and engaged him in the task. So, it's two chapters early, but here we go. Flying and viewing the whole area, he saw near Kamyavan Krishna, acting beyond his age, surrounded by boys of similar age, sporting in a group, but without Balaram. Seeing that, he began to contemplate. Quote, playing, they call each other names like son of a servant, family of thieves, thief in front of my eyes, and dear to the fools, boys teasing each other. They're imitating sheep and shepherds and sheep thieves. They cannot say where the stolen sheep are being taken. The shepherds cannot count the sheep since there are so many. The thieves come silently without being seen. The boy with dark complexion seems to be the shepherd. That boy should not come near me since he is more brilliant than 1,000 suns. I should not secretly take him away. He is now inattentive. I can steal all the boys who are like his life air wandering about externally. When he becomes overwhelmed with agitation, without any struggle, I will be able to catch the leader. My master will be pleased, will not be pleased with a half-finished job. He's got a strategy. Thinking in this way, he disguised himself as a cowherd boy, acting as a thief and entering their playing. Entering a deep forest, he took the remaining boys who were acting as sheep, stealing more and more boys. He kept them in a cave and he sealed the entrance with a rock, just as an insect steals another insect's steals other insects in its nest. Here comes Krishna. Just as a lion runs after a dog and attacks him, Krishna, knowing the demon was afflicting the innocent boys, approached the demon in agitation and catching him caused him pain. He threw down that demon which had taken away the boys because of their small size and, blocking his life air, treated him like an animal suitable for sacrifice. When the firmness of all his joints were destroyed, Krishna let him go. Seeing his footprints, he followed them to the door of the cave. Breaking the stone cover, he entered the cave while shining brightly. He destroyed the darkness in the cave and the darkness of the boys' hearts. The boys, whose pain in the cave was not as great as their pain of separation from Krishna, on seeing Krishna regain their life airs, standing up and weeping, the boys caused pain to Krishna. The boys felt the mountain was also crying as it echoed with the cries of the demon. Krishna pulled them from the cave. Surrounding him, they became free of sorrow by his touch. Seeing the frightful demon dead, they went to the gathering of their friends with joyful hearts. The boys and the devatas began praising Krishna together. The boys related how they were stolen by the demon. In this way, Krishna entered Braja. Seeing the dead demon, the devatas, enemies of the demons, showered flowers and revealed the feelings of Krishna. Quote, when thieves play in that place, their breathing stops. You have become devoid of life, Vyomatam. What did I do? Finishing the story, the narrator spoke. The narrator is Madhukanta in Gopal Champu. Oh, king of the cowherd. He's turning now to Nanda. He'd been narrating Krishna's pastimes to Nanda Maharaj. Oh, king of the cowherds, you have given birth to a son who has killed 3 demons headed by Vyomasura while playing. Experiencing the death of Vyomasura directly and filled with great happiness and decorated with smiling faces, they returned to their houses. That's the end of this section of Gopalchampu. As far as I can understand it, I've been meaning to check and I haven't done it yet. Krishna returned to Vrindavan after he had finished killing the demons. And the last two demons that he killed were Shishupal and Dantavakra. You know, Jai and Vijay, Shishupal and Dantavakra. And he killed, according to Jiva Goswami, he killed Dantavakra just outside the gate of Mathura. And then he changed his costume and put on cowherd boy costume, and from Mathura to go to Vrindavan is hop, skip, and a jump. He didn't go before then for various reasons we've discussed. But he promised and he went. So now he's back in Vrindavan for 2 months. And it's during this 2 months' time that Madhukanda Snigdhakanta, disciples of Narada, are narrating for the benefit of all the residents of Vrindavan the transcendental understanding about Krishna's pastimes they've gained from Narada. And they say, he blessed us with omniscience. So they're saying things that are very detailed. And anyways, a certain style of literature, Gopalchampu. And it's reiterating Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes. That's what the book is. It's not Mathura Dwaraka pastimes, it's Vrindavan pastimes, because he's in Vrindavan. Madhukanda Snigdhakanta, and the person's hearing, sometimes Radhan Krishna, sometimes Nanda, sometimes the cowherd man, but he's in Brajan, they, Snigdhakanta and Madhukanta, are in Brajan narrating Brajalila. Pretty much following the chapters, but obviously there's some other embellishments there. Katayantas chamam nityam tushanti cha ramanti cha. The great souls, they enjoy those activities, and what to speak of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they really liked describing the pastimes, each of them in their own personality and style. And it's nice, I find it nice to appreciate how there's some overlapping of how they describe things. At the same time, they have their personality that comes out, how they describe what they're describing. Very fascinating. I mean, the pastimes of Krishna are all attractive anyways. But then the association of the six Goswamis and how they're presenting them to the world, that's another fascinating on top of fascinating. They're giving themselves at the same time they're giving Krishna. Bhaktivinod Thakur, the range of his diversity in writing went all the way from Sanskrit to teaching village people in Bengal how to understand bhakti and Lord Chaitanya's teachings, and novels, commentary on previous acharya's texts, commentaries on Upanishads, and commentaries. the range was very, very, very vast. And it seems that similarly, to me, it seems that Jiva Goswami's range was like that too. He's most noted for the philosophical portions of his writings, the Sandarbhas in particular. But he has poetry, and he has this champu form of writing that's just so sweet. It's not dense, intense, strong, powerful, knock-you-over philosophy. It's just very sweet. And so forth. Very broad in his way of gift-giving. In many other ways also, the deity worship and so many other things that he did. Great personality. He had the vision, one of the contributions, one of his many. He had the vision to preserve the literature of the Goswamis. That is, he had engaged a whole group of scribes. Their whole assignment was making copies of the Goswami literature and preserving them in a library. And that's what this, there's a library still today in Vrindavan that's the product of Jiva Goswami's preservation work. But then along with preserving came the vision of distributing, you know, extra copies because it was done by hand at that time. And, you know, the effort of training the next set of acharyas and sending them to distribute the books of the Goswamis and the teachings after explaining to them thoroughly. Another gift that he made, contribution, was protecting the Goswami properties. It was, you know, what acharya thinks to do that? But he did. So there's a deed on the property and letters from the king that this is the property of the deity. And having them sign it, one property, I forget which one, he had them do it twice. You know, one date and another date. So many things. An amazing person. So this Gopal Champu is his product. And in one sense, it's his fourth commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, or at least two commentaries specifically on 10th canto. One commentary on the whole, every verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and another canto on the subjects, commentary on the subjects of Srimad Bhagavatam. How immersed was he? So it's nice to read what he's written and appreciate the coming to life of Krishna's pastimes. So let's see if there's some discussion.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, you are talking about Aristasura representing pride and arising from the neglect of bhakti. So is it that like when we are doing devotional service, not being present, is that the neglect or carelessness?
Not to be what?
Is it not being present when we are doing the devotional service?
Is not that present? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, is it the neglect that I was just like...
You're connecting not being present with pride?
Yeah.
I don't follow what you're saying.
No, Aristasura, the demon Aristasura.
Yes.
You said that he represents pride, and also you said that the pride, because it was arising from the neglect of bhakti.
Yeah. By the way, I'm just reading.
Okay.
Okay. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is speaking like that or writing like that.
Yeah.
So the two are connected. But let's get specific. Gosh, it's gone. I closed the page. Let's see. One moment. This is Agasura?
Aristasura.
Aristasura? Okay. Pride arising from indulgence in false religions invented by cheaters which cause neglect of bhakti. So now your question is,
when they speak
into the microphone, please.
So when they say the neglect of bhakti, I was just like reflecting like myself, like where, how do we try to neglect the bhakti? Is like not being present when we are doing devotional service or
I get your question. It's not just it's not what you just said. What's said here is not what you just said.
Okay,
so let's just say somebody, I was just hearing Prabhupada say this today in a lecture in Los Angeles. Some people come and they hear about Krishna. They don't want to. They're attracted because it's new and interesting, but after some time they leave. Because we're averse to Krishna. We take birth because we're averse to Krishna. So they leave. That's neglecting bhakti. Neglecting bhakti, then take up something else. That's not bhakti. Or, you know, something that's invented by somebody. Oh, I can become God or something or something or something. That's what's being spoken of here.
Okay? Yeah, sure. Thank you.
You had something.
So I think it was said that Krishna's pastimes here are a negative reflection of...
There's the Naimittika Leela, not his eternal pastimes, but the killing of demons, etc. is, I'll read the language, negatively tinted reflection. So let's take the birth pastime. There is no birth pastime, but it's the bhava that Mother Yashoda is the mother of Krishna. So there's no actual pastime like that. And then here there's an actual pastime. Krishna takes birth. And it's the negatively tinted reflection of the eternal pastime. So let's say, you know, Krishna's leaving Vrindavan. And it's like, oh, this horrible emotion thing that happens when the residents of Vrindavan, when Krishna leaves. But, you know, that's an ecstatic emotion. It's not what it looks like to the worldly person. It's a negatively tinted reflection of the eternal pastimes. The eternal pastime is feeling separation from Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And there's events connected to that separation. So negatively tinted reflections. Yeah, it's his language, not mine. I'm just trying to massage the language by massaging it, maybe the meaning comes out more clearly. It's not the same. This language is not the same as, you know, the banyan tree example with the roots up and the branches down, because in that attached from the banyan tree reflection and understand the real thing and be attached to the real thing. So it's not that same kind of reflection. be detached from the pastimes of Krishna that he performs in this world. Rather, I'll just go back. These occasional pastimes, leaving Vrindavan to live in Mathura and Dwaraka, returning to Braja, killing of demons and so forth, these pastimes are very useful for an aspiring devotee who is bound within the material world. The Naimittika Leela, or occasional pastimes of leaving Vraja, actually exist in Goloka Vrindavan, but only in a conspicuously absent manner, semicolon. They are truly manifest only in the material world. Practicing devotees, sadhakas, understand these occasional pastimes to be like negatively tinted reflections. Practicing devotees, sadhakas, understand these occasional pastimes to be like negatively tinted reflections of the eternal pastimes. Is that okay?
I think I understand.
It's unusual language, and it's something of an abstraction that's a little high, like what is it and what's he trying to convey, what it is. He doesn't say it is, it's like negatively tinted reflection. So killing of demons doesn't go on in the spiritual world. It's a negatively tinted, it's so on. Okay?
Thank you, Maharaj.
What about our host and hostess? Do you want to add something here? Churn the topic a little bit?
No, that's fine, man.
You're okay. Okay. Back here.
Oh.
Maharaj, is there any killing possible in spiritual world?
Is what possible?
The killing of demons. Like, killing is possible in spiritual
killing world. Killing is possible?
Yeah. Or is it possible only in the material world?
Is killing possible in the spiritual world? That's your question?
Yeah. Or is it just a characteristic of the
material? It's just a pastime. So there's no killing in the spiritual world. There's not even a pastime of killing. Okay? Things are eternal. Some things don't come into being and go out of being. There's no killing. There's no birth. There's no death. There's no temporary. Things are eternal. Okay?
Yes.
Okay.
Perfect, yeah.
Online. Yeah.
Actually, some online questions. This is from Sanchari Dasi Mataji. Is there any correlation between the length of time Krishna fought specific demons and the intensity of the anarthas they represent? And the amount of care we need to maintain to stay away from or overcome them?
Well, this question is not present. To answer a question like that would require our acharyas to comment on something like that. I have not come across anything where that question is addressed, so I can't help her with her question. The topic is not often. It's only these two places, Chaitanya Shikshamrita and Sri Krishna Samhita. I'm presenting it because it came up, like, which does somebody asked 2 evenings in a row, so I went there. Here's what the text says. But a detailed question like she's asking, I don't know of any commentary by acharyas that touches that topic. So I'm not going to be a fool and speculate. I'm unfamiliar with anything on that topic.
One more question, a couple more here, Maharaj. Again from Sanchari Dasi Mataji. Practicing devotees who have achieved perfection train with Nitya Siddhas before serving in Goloka. What type of souls go on to become demons in Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan? Is it possible that they were also devotees who have been called to serve as his demons?
No. No indication of that. They're actual demons. I'm familiar with Acharya's writing. In Goloka, there's a mood, and then here there's actual demons. They're actual demons. They're not role-playing on a stage. They're actual demons. Okay?
Okay. One more last question from online.
Go ahead.
From Seva Priya Devidasi, can Sadaka Siddhas ever attain the same love for Krishna as Nitya Siddhas?
Yes. Yes. Prabhupada speaks like this. It's not that in the spiritual world they ask one another, oh, are you a Nitya Siddha, or are you a Sadhana Siddha, or are you a Kripa Siddha? I mean, he doesn't say it like that, but you know, when the stage of perfection is there, siddha is siddha. So there's siddha. There's everything in the spiritual world is dynamic, even for the nitya siddhas. And for those who are sadhana siddhas, they're apprentices, and once their apprenticeship is completed, They're fully integrated in Krishna's pastimes. There's not a pecking order. We're Nitya Siddhas.
One question.
Yeah.
Maharaj, you mentioned that compassion is not possible unless one has devotion for Krishna.
That's Bhaktivinoda, yes.
Okay. So, the compassion that we see,
it's a reflection.
It's a reflection, okay.
It's a mode of goodness manifestation that's a reflection of the real thing. That's the tree, and then there's the reflection of the tree, and then there's the tree. Real compassion is a subset of love for Krishna, attachment for Krishna. Then there's real affection, or compassion, or real anything. That's reality, and this is a reflection of the reality. Looks like, but it's not.
I have one question.
Okay, hold on. Take the microphone. You're very enthusiastic.
Not from me, actually. It's from my friend, from our temple president.
Okay. Speak slowly, though.
Yeah, sure. So, have we ever, like the fallen souls like we, have we ever seen Krishna, or is it that we were with Krishna and we are fallen down, or we have never seen Krishna?
So I just heard today in Los Angeles a recorded lecture. Give him the microphone. Prabhupada was saying, it's not just me, you too are seeing Krishna all the time. It's just not registering. Then he was describing, what does seeing Krishna mean? You see in relation to Krishna. But Maya means to not see in relation to Krishna. So there's Krishna's form, and that's one way of seeing Krishna, but that another is chanting, and that's Krishna, and the deity is Krishna, and the trees out there, that's Krishna. It's a manifestation of Krishna. Is there something that's not Krishna? So we're seeing Krishna, but it's not registering that we're seeing Krishna. So he spent 15 minutes saying what I just said, so I just gave a quick version. Now, when you're speaking of seeing Krishna, it's Krishna's original form, his swarup. But there's so many other, and my point here is there's so many other manifestations of Krishna that we're not going to recognize the swarup without seeing the other manifestations of Krishna that are before us. We don't have the eyes to see the eyes of love. And so we can see through knowledge, And gradually through bhakti developing eyes to see Krishna everywhere. Seeing Krishna everywhere. So back to your question. There's using Bhaktivinoda, borrowing from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's language. Your question is misleading. This is Bhaktivinoda, not me. It's as if, you're placing an event that's not within time within time. That's the misleading nature. Like once upon a time something. And now some time passed and here we are. But you know, we're with, so the frame of the question is misleading because it places seeing Krishna within as an event in time and it's not. And not being with Krishna is an event within time, it's not. Put that in your binary processor and see what happens. Yes, yes, the lens through which we're looking at everything is past, present, and future time, and three-dimensional space. And if it doesn't fit that paradigm, it's like it bounces, so there is such a thing as eternal time. This is just a reflection of it. And three-dimensional space is just a construct. And there's much higher consciousness and there's space just without limit. It doesn't fit within our mind. It doesn't fit. Our mind can't get around it. It doesn't fit within it.
So it's our conditioning that is giving rise to false question.
Say it again slower.
So it is our conditioning that is giving...
Yes, conditioning is our... We're covered. Yeah. We're covered. I'm just sharing. I get up early in the morning and I'm, you know, the room where I'm staying has a nice window. So I'm looking out at the phases of the moon as it's because it was... You know, the phases of the moon, not only the phases of the moon change, but the position of the moon changes. Because there's this one star that's really bright. And then it doesn't move. I don't know which star it is. Maybe that's Dhruva Loka or Polestar. I don't know. But then there's another star over there and there's cloud cover and then you can't see anything. Or you can see a little bit. So, it's not just we're conditioned. We're covered by Maya. We're covered by illusion. We're trying to understand reality through the lens of illusion. And we can't understand it that way. So the approach is the wrong approach to understand transcendence. We understand transcendence through sound. The whole material construct is through sound. And the spiritual reality is through sound. So we're practicing hearing spiritual sound. And then the illusion, as you said, conditioning, but I'll say, you know, we're covered by illusion, by Maya. So we can't see, we can't understand that star is up there. When the cloud cover goes, it's still there. And the cloud cover comes, and you can't see it. Okay? You're happy. You look happy. Anything else in the room? Something up front?
So then, does the same thing like apply to like
same thing? What
does the same same concept apply for like for the spirit, like when we fell down from the spiritual world?
Does the same thing apply? Yes, we were not going to be able to understand it in our present lens. And we will understand that when that lens is cleansed. Thank you for that question. Last chance. Anything at all? You're okay. Come on, you're a host and hostess.
No, I've listened to your lecture on time. I think you have talked so many times, but I still didn't understand. You know? Or I understand, I forget it, whatever.
This is not lecture, this is just reading.
No, like previous lecture?
Yeah.
You have a very old lecture, maybe 5-6
yes.
year old. You know, on time. 20 minutes video is on YouTube somewhere.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I listen to it many times, but don't understand.
You don't understand it?
No. Maybe the language is very, you know.
Okay. Okay. I'll try to speak simpler language. Responding to that, the message of Srimad Bhagavatam particularly, of course, even Chaitanya Charitamrita is even higher postgraduate study, but the message of Srimad Bhagavatam is very profound. And any topic, my experience is, any topic you go, it just keeps, it's like the ocean that doesn't have a bottom. You keep going and going and there's oxygen down there, but you can't find the bottom. You come back up and then how does this fit together with that? It's really, and there's 10 main topics and the subdivisions of those topics. And it's all meant for this one purpose, to reveal Krishna. All of this and that, you know, to reawaken our attraction for Krishna, and specifically as we're doing here, Krishna in Vrindavan. But all the other things are meant to take us there. Like this discussion about, you know, what we, take even the simplest thing of transcendence. The beginning, you know, Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, you're not the body. And that there's layers of understanding that. You go down and down and down and down and down, you know, hum brahmasmi. Then there's the concept, and then there's the realization, but then what are we related to? There's the world around us, and there's the source of the soul, and there's a connection between the soul and the individual soul and Paramatma that's overseeing, you know, the blowing of the wind, and that, if I'm sitting here, there's birds that are jumping from branch to branch. You probably see it all the time. I just, looking out your window. And, you know, the whole picture, we were discussing, I'm sharing, just responding to you. We read, the section from Bhishma's consoling Yudhisthira, chapter 9, canto 1, describing the misfortune of the Pandavas and Kunti, and who can explain it. It's an inexorable time. And Prabhupada explains. It's just mentioned two lines. Just as clouds blow in the sky, powered by the wind, so planets are moving by the power of the wind, and time is moving the wind that moves the planets in space. So What's the connection between time and the wind and planets moving? It's just, but you know, that's a subject that's touched, you know, it's only mentioned over here, but it's explained more over there. So I'm the kind of person that likes if, you know, you wiggle this over here and that wiggles. So what's the connection? You know, spiritual technology. Because that's what technology is. You wiggle this and that wiggles. Oh, I got an invention. Patent and, you know, so. The purpose of going into some question like that is to understand behind everything is Krishna. He's Mad Ashraya. He's the shelter of everything. He's the shelter of the clouds and the clouds blowing in the sky and the planets moving and events happening in our life, and it's happening by the movements of time. And time moves wind. So I researched it. And so there's this nice language in Canto 5 of Pravaha Vayu, ropes of wind, that connect all the planets in the Bhuvar and Swargaloka region with Dhruvaloka. That's the topmost region of the heavenly realm. And there's ropes of wind. I've never seen a rope of wind before, but it's there in the Bhagavatam. And then there's this Dakshina something, Dakshina Varta. There's a celestial wind that blows the ropes of wind so the planets move, and all that is happening as a movement of Kala Chakra. So, now, we don't see all that stuff. And we, you know, how is it all happening? Behind it all is time. And behind time is Krishna. So it's all of that is there in the Vedas, not just so we can know how we can make planets move or how the planets move. It's just not information. It's behind it all is Krishna. And here we are speaking about Krishna's pastimes. So this fits together with, brings us to Krishna. And it's all there. I mean, you can just say everything's connected to Krishna, and that's, you know, the beginning and the end. But the Bhagavatam is 18,000 verses that describe in detail and detail and detail. And the purpose of it is to not be in illusion like this other, but behind everything, so there's that star in the sky, but there's a cloud in the way. I can't see the star. But when the cloud moves, there it is. It's really bright. Krishna's there. And through the agency of sound of the Bhagavatam, we can see Krishna within everything, which is exactly what Prabhupada was saying at this lecture in Los Angeles, 1968. He said, sometimes people say, have you seen God? Can you show me God? And my answer is, not only I can see, you can see, and not only that, you're seeing all the time, but you can't see because you're an illusion. Because you don't see the connection of all things with the source of all things. That's what the Bhagavatam's doing for us. Theology of the world teaches, the Bhagavatam gives us, here's how it works. It's a graduate study literature. It's a spiritual science. You know, when this wiggles, that wiggles. So, there's a cause and effect. And what's the cause of all causes? So we can just say Krishna is the cause of all causes and done with it. However, we're an illusion. We're thinking otherwise. We're thinking it's up for grabs. And I want to make it mine. I want to, how do we get free from material consciousness and the emotions and the attachments connected to material consciousness? It's seeing Krishna's behind everything. It's not jnana bhakti or jnana mishra bhakti, it's bhakti. You know, the Bhagavatam is taking us on the bhakti tour. Here's Krishna, and here's Krishna, and here's Krishna, and here's Krishna. The language is pretty direct. For some people, it's too direct. Sometimes it's a little puzzling, but it's revealing Krishna, the Krishna connection within all things. And by hearing it and hearing it and hearing it and hearing it and hearing it, it starts to become clear. It's not just an acute saying, Krishna is within all things, but Krishna is within all things. And you can see it. So, something that Prabhupada said, Nectar Devotion was published in 1970, and we were reading it, and couldn't understand it. So Prabhupada's instruction to us was, when you read a Nectar Devotion, don't understand it, go back and read it again. And after reading again, you don't understand it, go back and read it again. And you continue reading it again, and eventually you understand it. So like that, because with faith, the Bhagavatam is pure sound vibration, and you repeat it. You hear it, and you repeat it, and you hear it, and you discuss it, and you recite. And slowly, the fact, for example, the fact that the holy name and the form of Krishna are non-different. It's there just by the mantra being repeated again and again. So what do I understand about the holy name and the form of Krishna are the same, and it's the form of Krishna is within the holy name? I don't have that realization. I don't understand it. But there's a process of understanding, and that's submissive oral reception with rapt attention. That's our program. That's our yoga. That's our means of achieving perfection, not just, you know, being pious, but achieving spiritual perfection, hearing sound vibration coming from the pure source. And if we don't understand it, hear it again, like that. And Krishna becomes revealed. We're instructed by Prabhupada, try to understand. And we can understand. I can't understand with my contaminated consciousness. But I'm told to try to understand, so I have to get free from that contamination of consciousness through sound. And I'm trying to understand. I have to reorient how I'm trying to understand the faculty that I'm using. It's the ear and the heart. And that's how you can understand. Higher consciousness awakens. It's a sublime process. And 10th canto's very, very confidential and very sweet. So, I'm just responding to your little comment. Are we something online? One, two. Okay, microphone.
The first one is from Amit Verma Prabhu.
From who?
Amit Verma.
Okay.
Asking, Maharaj, what does champu mean?
I don't know the meaning. It refers to a style of literature that has certain characteristics. And those characteristics I've mentioned, there's three or four. Some parts is just like commentary. Some parts is direct reference to scriptural verses. Some parts are like a song. It's very short phrases and a short phrase and a short phrase and a short phrase. And then it ends. So there's elements, there are others, that comprises what a champu is. It's name for a particular type of literature that has such and such elements.
So the other question, Maharaj, is from Radha Vallabh Das. One of the key instruction to chant effectively is Trinadapi Sunichayana, six sastakam prayer.
Yes.
We observe that devotees connected to lordships with deep gratitude exemplify this prayer, irrespective of external challenging situations. So the question is, deep gratitude to lordships is key quality to embrace this prayer?
Well, gratitude means you've received something. Or you're acknowledging that you have received something. I'm not sure how to answer his question. It sounds like a precondition. That is to say, if I don't have gratitude, then I can't have those four qualities. Or to the degree that I have the gratitude, I can manifest and cultivate those four qualities. That's not specifically what Lord Chaitanya says. It's more a matter, the precondition is more a matter of yearning to connect, because the line that precedes this Shikshastaka 3 is Durdaivim Idrishahajani Nanuraga. I don't have attachment. There's a yearning for attachment, anurag. I don't have attachment. Yearning for that attachment is the precursor to humility and the other ones. More so than gratitude. I mean, that's taken directly from Lord Chaitanya's teaching. So it's not that gratitude doesn't have its place, but the yearning for that connection with Krishna on a, in a heart level, on a real personal feeling level, is the precursor or the prerequisite. Gratitude is I've received something, so now I want to give back. So the preliminary to that one is, I wish to connect, and I don't feel that I'm not sensing that connection. Something that you've been sharing. So yearning, that's our, you know, yearning, and then enthusiastically pursuing that yearning. That's the Y-E, out of the S part, from our festival, the Holy Name. Okay, so I think we're done. Any final anything? Our hostess, how about you? No, sure, you're a good wife. I'm putting her on the spot. See, anything you want to share with us? You're just happy that we're here. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.